Oh my gosh, what a stressful morning, mate. There's been this massive scandal going on. I got caught up interviewing a lady about an anti-vax scandal.
Oh, what was her name?
Mrs. Doubtfizer?
Makes a lot of
sense. She
was
an old lady anyways, bless her soul. But look, that's not what we're talking about today.
No.
What is the scandal we've got happening
today? We are discussing a big one. That's what she said. Puppet master. This man is a con artist. May even go as far as to say a bigger con artist than Nintendo Switch.
What this guy did was his lies were definitely crazier.
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't just my enemies were after me. It goes even further than that.
Absolutely.
Right?
He's in the Forbes top two scammers of the year.
And look, this seems to be a trend with 2022 at least, is that we got men scamming women, finessing women out of money. It feels like the tables have turned. All these years of women finessing me and my free food, it looks like the Tinder swindler and now the puppet master are coming for their revenge. Sorry, that was a personal thing. Talk to me, Chip, what we got?
Well, his name is Robert Freegard, and he is one of our own. He is a British con artist who stole almost £1 million from at least 8 different people over several years. He claimed he was an MI5 agent, worked at Scotland Yard, the whole shebang. Serious business, you got to respect it. And he convinced people to transfer money to him from their savings, very similar to the Tinder Swindler.
Wow, so this guy, I mean, look, £1 million. Look, I respect it. I think £1 million is a good amount to scam. I think the Tinder Swindler definitely did almost 10 times that. Mm-hmm. But the way in which this man, the lengths that he went to were definitely further than the Tinder Swindler, that's for sure. I want to talk about his... He's got sort of two main victims that were spoken about. There was a Netflix documentary done on this. You guys can feel free to watch that after this if this particular case appeals to you. And the two that they focus on is a woman named Sarah Smith and also a woman named Sandra Clifton. Now, we're going to go through Sarah Smith first because just the way he starts setting up these women is nuts. Is nuts. So let's talk Sarah Smith. Sarah Smith was a student at a top agricultural university in England. Look, that just means they were at a university where it teaches them how to farm and do all that side of business. Okay?
There's a university for farming.
Yeah. You didn't know that?
No.
They got to learn how to farm somewhere, brother. This was at a time in the early 90s when the IRA had essentially declared war. So it was a big topic there. And this particular university had a large Irish population. This is important to note because this is essentially the crux of Robert Freegard's heist, his scam.
Yes.
Sarah had a boyfriend named John. Now, John went to the pub, as you do, and he met a new barman who went by the name Rob. For Robert.
Yeah.
Robert Freegard. He met Robert Freegard, okay? And this was the bar. Now, they ended up becoming, like, sort of friends, talking about things. Things got a little bit deep, and John confesses to Rob that actually one of my friends recently committed suicide. At this point, Rob decides this is the perfect weak spot for him to try and exploit. He starts planting seeds in John's mind, saying, did he really commit suicide? Could it have been the IRA that actually killed him?
That's messed up. You know?
Adding in all these doubtful seeds into his mind.
I mean, but you gotta be a... You know, you gotta have a couple of screws loose to just be like, yeah, barman's got it right, bang on here.
Yeah, well, look, mate, trust me, when you start slowly putting these seeds in...
When you trust him with your Guinness, you can trust him with your life.
Exactly, and that's unfortunately what happened. So as things goes on, Rob starts feeding him more and more information, starts saying, actually, some of the students at this university are part of the IRA.
Yeah.
But he takes it a step further. This is where it gets crazy. He then starts saying, I'm part of the MI5.
Right.
I'm undercover out here.
Oh, yeah, that's... Right? That's believable.
Exactly. All right.
I'm actually also part of the MI5. Good. Yeah. But I'm actually so good, you just don't believe it.
At this point, Rob goes to John and says, I've checked your records. It was clean. And MI5 actually want to use you. Rob starts to teach John, look, this is the way we do it in the MI5. Let's start, I'm gonna teach you how to fight. I'm gonna teach you all these other things, the MI5 way, okay? Now at this point, Rob has actually managed to convince John that even his own flatmate is part of the IRA. And he starts saying like, look, mate, we've got to get away from here. We've got to run away. So the best way for you to do it, you can't tell them about one, that we're part of the, or I'm part of the MI5, and two, that we have the IRA after us. So you're gonna have to come up with something better, a reason to leave and leave quickly. So what does he tell John to say? He's got terminal cancer.
Wow.
That was his go-to.
It's hard to come back to that. You can't like, oh.
Once you say you've got terminal cancer, look, you're like, you're now deep in a serious lie here, okay?
Yeah.
He then says to two girls that he knows, Maria and the Sarah girl that we're gonna talk about a little bit more. He says, look, I've got terminal cancer.
Yes.
And now I want to go around the country and tick things off my bucket list. And we need to go ASAP because he's gonna die soon.
I mean, it makes sense.
These two girls, obviously good friends of John, are there like, well, yeah, it's his bucket list. We have to go with him. So that's exactly what they do. And they all set off on this journey.
Where do they go? Skydiving, stuff like that?
Well, look, I don't really know what exactly was on his bucket list, but...
Five Farm, Dubai.
They went out into the country, okay?
It's an interesting bucket list.
Yeah. Now, at some point on this trip, the girls, Marie and Sarah, actually get told, guys, look, that was all a big lie, because guess what? This is actually a lot more serious. I'm part, you know, Rob's part of the MI5, and the IRA are actually chasing us. Now, Sarah had the bottle to actually ask, like, wait, hold on a second. I wanna be a bit more inquisitive about this and know a bit more. And, you know, is he really part of the MI5 or the IRA really after us? And Rob, clearly expecting this sort of scenario, he had actually managed to find out a lot of information about Sarah to convince her that he actually did work for MI5. So we found out things like bank account details, where her family owned land, things like that. Like, he's obviously done his research, but
smart.
To anybody, like, if you were to ask me about, oh, Cal, do you actually work in the MI5? You would expect me to come back with some pretty personal information about you in order to make...
So bank details, place it online. Find all that stuff on Facebook, mate.
Do you post your bank details on Facebook? This is the 90s as well, Chip.
That's how you throw them off to scent.
I've been
in this game for a while, brother.
Sarah bites the bait completely, believes him, and she said that decision of her choosing to believe Rob and this story completely changed her life for 10 years.
Bunch of tomfoolery, this.
It is nuts.
Sarah's parents, they're getting worried about the disappearance. Rob is also claiming that MI5 was scared that Sarah's father might be talking to the wrong people and could give information to the IRA unknowingly. So Rob has taken Sarah back to the parents. They've gone to visit the parents at midnight, where they had to stick to the cover story of John having terminal cancer.
Okay.
The dad has not believed the story. He's on some, you know, something dodgy going on. And he swiftly left. I don't know where to, maybe a farm as well, but he's gone.
Yeah.
The dad hasn't believed this story. Thinks it's a bunch of cosmolop nonsense, waffle, and then they've left.
Fair enough.
Yeah, they've given it a good crack. He's not having it, and they've bounced. The dad, of course, he's not believed him, so he's still very worried, and he started tracking certain things, like a credit card, and he's seen that she is buying items that are, you know, unnecessary things, and it was a bit unlike her, right?
Because he was managing to ascend. He did, like, sort of like this, right, behind us right now. He created a map and was just tracking her spending, and she was going all over the country with this credit card.
That's smart. That's exactly what I would do. I was an MI5 agent. Anyway, she then calls back home and she tells him that she won't be returning to university as she's got a graduate offer job.
Cap.
Yep, complete cappuccino. She was fluent in
Japanese.
My man, he's learning so quick. Anyway, the family couldn't do anything about this as she was over the age of 18. She is now an adult, and the dad continues following this trail by himself. He's trying to figure this out.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, imagine hearing, because especially back then, uni, a bit more of a prestigious thing, right? A lot of people, you know, they really want to go to uni.
Yeah.
Your daughter gets into uni, blah, blah, blah. And then you hear this story, you think it's complete waffle. And then next thing you know, your daughter's calling up to say she's got a graduate offer. Obviously, the dad has been nailed on this whole time. can tell that it's just complete waff.
Yeah.
And you would just be so gutted that you know your daughter
is either
falling for a scam or he genuinely believes that his daughter is in on it as well.
Sarah was obviously told to change her appearance. She had to dye her hair blonde from brown. They used fake names, got jobs. Sarah was actually working in a fish and chip shop. And John was working at a pub. By the way, can I just say,
yeah,
it doesn't sound great, but if you work in a fish and chip shop, that's free fish and chips.
That is true. But you also just get like mad greasy everything. I'm sure there's probably downsides.
There's always a sacrifice for everything. Anyway, the dad has taken it a step further. He's hired a private investigator.
Top man.
But in the end, Sarah couldn't be found, I guess, because she changed her appearance. Even the private investigator could not get onto him. She tried to steal her own passport. She tried to sneak into the house, but her dad had hidden the passport. Maybe he knew something was up. She'd come back for that. So she couldn't find that. In the end, she hadn't spoken to her parents for 4 years.
Mental.
Crazy. Could you imagine just leaving your parents for 4 years?
Yeah, that is, I mean... And the crazy thing is this whole time Sarah thinks that she's on the run from this this IRA
It's a complete, it's a scam. But yeah, the group that they were initially traveling in that they'd all escaped with.
The bucket list team.
The bucket list team, Rob, John Maria, and Sarah. It actually even got separated.
So they all broke up, I imagine Rob's probably told him this is for the best, we all need to split up now.
Mm-hmm.
And that way he can control the narrative easier because if they're not all together, he can focus on each person and tell them a different narrative if they're not talking to each other.
It's gotten to the point now where Rob does just control absolutely everything in her life. Now her parents, they own their own business and they were actually in debt of millions of pounds and had to make a lot of their staff redundant now. Rob and Sarah have been asking the parents for money. You know, they need money to live. They need money for security from the IRA.
Gotcha.
You know.
That waffle.
Yeah,
but the thing is, the dad knows it's waffle.
Yes.
So he's not handing over the money yet.
No, but eventually, he does pay the money, but it comes with a price. He says he doesn't want to speak to Sarah ever again. He knows it's waffle. He's like, you know what? Take the money.
Oh, that is heartbreaking. The guy knows, but at the same time, it's like, that's his daughter.
Yeah. It's like, here, take this. Hope you survive in life. I don't want to know you.
Yeah, because they were literally constantly pestering the dad. Phone calls, everything, all the time. Guilt trip. And eventually the guy was there like, I've had enough. Take this money. Don't chat to me again. That must be hard to say to your daughter, you know?
Yeah.
And the total amount of money that the dad ended up giving away as the leave me alone money was between 180 and 200,000 pounds. We are not talking about a light 10 to 20 G's. Yeah. We're talking a hefty sum, six figures.
Yeah. Get you a few properties back then, that.
At this point, Rob decides to leave Sarah in a safe house in London, telling her to pretend don't answer the door at all if anyone knocks on the door, right? Like, just pure hide yourself away.
Very controlling.
Yeah, and just leave it at that. Do not answer the door, right? Now, let's go back to John, the guy that sort of got them in this mess in the first place, really, right? He ended up going to his family and saying, look, I need 40,000 pounds. Oh, well, this was over the space of 3 or 4 years, right? I need 40,000 pounds for protection services against these people that are chasing me. Unfortunately, that money got handed over as well. At this point, because they've all been split up, John's spending a lot of time on his farm, with this protection money that he's supposed, well, the money that he spent on protection, and he realizes no one's actually after me. The guy had just been sort of like jailed in his own mind because he'd been fed these things. He thinks people are after him. But after being on there for a fair while, he just realizes no one's after me. Now, once he realizes this, he obviously feels incredibly guilty because remember, he was the one that sort of got them in this mess in the first place.
Everyone involved.
John ends up messaging Sarah's dad to explain the story and explain how he feels he's been scammed out of this whole thing. And obviously, Sarah's dad probably sat there like, I fucking told you so type of thing. But ultimately, because they've been split up, he still doesn't know where Sarah is. No one knows where Sarah is. And after he got that confirmation that all of his sort of gut instincts were actually true, they got confirmed by John, he ends up speaking to the police. He ends up taking it a little step further, right? And we'll go into that and we'll tie that loose end in a little bit once we talk about his second victim, who goes by the name Sandra Clifton. Sandra Clifton. Now, she had two teenage children. And in this documentary, you actually, they sort of tell the narrative. And it's really, really sad about what happens to Sandra Clifton. They got two teenagers. One goes by the name Jake. The other one, Sophie. And they're really worried about her, as you would be, right? Yeah. When you listen to this story. Now, it's also important to note that Sandra has a now ex-husband who went by the name Mark Clifton as well. He met Sandra when he was 14, married at 20. Then they had Sophie, and after that, they ended up getting divorced, okay? Totally fine, totally normal, nothing out of the ordinary there. Obviously, what is common to do? A little bit of online dating. They're divorced, she's a single woman, she starts doing online dating. And she met a few people, but a particular person hung around, right? One that she felt was always there, and his name was David, okay? Now, Sophie claims that David always said he loved cars and all these expensive things, right? He told the family he had a really busy job and that he could buy them all these expensive, cool things. Like, imagine that. You get there, and I guess your stepdad is this rich guy, can buy all these cars. Instantly, you're like, yeah, fuck yeah, this guy's awesome, right? But he never actually acted on that. So he never actually went out and bought the nice car. Bought the nice things that he was always talking about. Mm. Just in the middle of this absolutely crazy, crazy case, we are here to talk about Noom. Now, we've spoken about it a few times here, and it's a completely different way of approaching dieting. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, people think, oh, when I'm dieting, I just need to cut out all the bad foods. I'm gonna just eat salad. Well, no. Noom is actually taking more of a psychological approach to it. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, they're just improving your relationship with food. So, what they help you do is not just cut out all the bad food and live a really grumpy, miserable lifestyle. They're just helping you understand that it's important to have a better relationship with the food you're eating. Of course, we are very fact-based here. We're science-based, mm-hmm. okay? And by that, what I'm saying is more than 80% of users complete the program, which is great news. You could be part of that 80%. More than 60% of the users lose 5% or more body weight.
It's quite a lot.
That is a lot. 60% of them manage to keep the weight off for a year or more, because that's the big thing. It's great if you can lose it in the short term, but can you keep it off you for an entire year? According to Noom, they can help you with that, right? Noom has published over 25 peer-reviewed scientific journal articles about the science that goes into their approach to helping people achieve a healthier way of life. Thumbs up from me. Noom is all about helping you completely unlearn all your bad habits and your bad relationships with food. And if you just go off track for one day, well, Noom will help you with that. Like, don't worry, you haven't completely messed it up. Noom will help you get back on track and back to where you want to be. Right, so this is it, guys. Lose weight for good. Sign up for your trial at noom.com/fellasmysteries. That's noom.com/fellasmysteries. Guys, go and get that trial. He was spending so much time around the house, he basically just moved in. And that's when things started to go a little bit south, right? And in particular, on a trip where they all traveled to Spain, he was being super secretive about his passport. Nobody was allowed to touch the passport, no one was allowed to see it. And he was also very secretive about his second name as well. Again, that's probably why he didn't want anyone to see the passport. I mean, look, every time you're on a trip or holiday with someone, you always say, all right, let me see your passport photo.
And you try and hide it because you know you look clapped.
Yeah, but look, this guy went to extra lengths to make sure nobody saw his passport. Let's fast forward to 2012 now. And Sandra's relationship with her ex-husband, Mark, completely changed. Because before they were quite civil, they got along, whether it be for the sake of the kids, whatever. But they actually just got along completely fine. But in 2012, that completely changed. She stopped talking to him and she even stopped going out and seeing her friends. And that was probably the more worrying part, mm-hmm. because maybe, who knows, maybe David said, look, I'm not comfortable with you talking with your ex-husband the way you do. Okay, fine. But then if you're also not going out and seeing friends, that should definitely raise a few flags, mm-hmm. right? She became angrier and angrier towards even her own kids. And this family time that they would always have completely stopped. So it seemed like David was coming in and just messing up the whole family dynamic that was there. David even took it a step further by telling the family that Jake, one of the sons, was gay. Right? Mm. He wasn't, but he's just gone and said that to cause a bit of a rift.
Yeah,
a bit of drama, a bit of tension within the family. And then again, David starts infiltrating Sophie with negative information, and even made Sophie, who only earned £400 right a month, made her pay 300 of those pounds as rent.
She only got 100 quid left.
What's she supposed to do with 100 quid, right? Not only that, but David manages to tell Sophie, I know you've got 10,000, he found out that she had £10,000 in savings. He said, give me that £10,000, I want that as well. And obviously, this is like a stepdad, this is an authoritative figure. She did it, unfortunately, right? Not only that, but then it started getting really weird because David would also just like randomly lock Jake out of the house. Like Jake would be coming back from things and he just wouldn't be able to get into his own house. And at this point, he's infuriated. Jake is like, look, I've been treated like absolute shit.
Can't blame him.
At this point, the family's pretty much split up, right? And people have moved out, okay? And Sophie ended up living up by herself for a little bit, for like a year. And then after that, she ends up finally meeting up with her brother and her dad again. Her dad being Mark, obviously. And it was as if this David Blood had come in, just torn the whole family apart. No one was talking to anyone because of all these like, lies and misinformation given mm-hmm. about everyone. And then finally, when they came back together, it was like, oh, we all now realize who the enemy is. But unfortunately, David and Sandra are still together. Sandra can't see that. She can't see he's the enemy.
She's got the wool over her eyes, man.
2014 rolls around, Chip. And guess what? David and Sandra had both completely left the house. Okay. And Mark was like, well, I want to sell this house. I want to get rid of it. So he turns up and he finds all these unpaid bills. And most importantly, he found a massive padlock on the master bedroom. Ooh. One of those ones that would be like, it's like an industrial beast, right? And it was either to keep either something in or someone out, but it did not look good at all. And at this point, that obviously raises loads of red flags. They're going, what the hell has been happening in this house since I haven't been living in here. Mark at this point says, right, I need to look into this David guy. He has wreaked havoc across my family. And what does he do? He searches him online and he even went to the police, he even said, police, would you mind helping me find out what's going on here? But ultimately the police had no reason to because there wasn't, nothing had actually happened. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no real crime committed, but nobody had heard from Sandra, the mum of the two kids. Nobody's heard from her. So what does he decide to do? Right, if I file a missing persons report here, that might actually get the police to start doing something. So he files a missing persons report on Sandra, the mum. 2015 comes around and they finally locate Sandra. The missing person, they'd found the mum. Great news. Unfortunately, they also had to tell her that the man you are with is a convicted con man. Oh. This is a con man, okay? And you have to be aware of that. And they asked her, are you aware that you're with this convicted con man? And she replied with, yes, I know I'm with him. So she knew full well, or at least she was told to say, she knew full well who she was with. And she still didn't do it. She didn't contact the family.
She was living that life.
Mate, Jake, the son, hadn't seen his own mom in 7 years, right? And he says that he occasionally speaks to her over the phone, but every time he does, it feels like she's reading off of a script or being told what to say.
Dodgy business, eh?
Yeah. At this point, we know that we've got a serious case on our hand. And insert Bob Brandon, the detective sergeant. And remember, Sarah's dad, the first girl, contacted him after finding out about this big scam that mm-hmm. Sarah got involved in, right? So the dad contacted Bob Brandon. And at this time, Bob Brandon goes, hold on, I've actually heard of this case before, right? When a woman in Hammersmith police called in to report that her ex-fiance, Robert Freeguard, had deceived her of approximately £30,000. And again, in this case, Robert was a car salesman, very good, like really good at what he did. You know how these car salesmen, man, mm-hmm. they'll sell you the broken car.
Yeah.
This guy was elite, right? So that's what he was doing. And then again, he was also going around telling people that he worked for the MI5. But obviously, Bob, the sergeant, searched him up to double check. Wait, does this guy actually work in MI5? No records of them in there. So at this point, they know they're onto a con artist. They know they're onto a scammer. This next part of the story is super key because this is where like the whole setup happens and how they managed to find and capture Rob Freeguard, mm-hmm. right? And it all started because they actually found a car registered to him to an address down like about 200 miles south, right? So they all head down to this address, like, oh, we might find him here. But unfortunately, a fella opens up the door. It's not Robert Freeguard. But what he does say is that he had an ex-girlfriend who goes by the name Kim Adams. And they were living together. And all of a sudden, she said that she was ill, very ill, and she disappeared. Mm-hmm. Sound familiar? John was told to say that he had terminal cancer.
All adding up, similar stories.
Yeah, exactly. And so at this point, the detective's like, oh, that's interesting. She had bought this car off of Robert Freeguard when he worked at mm-hmm. the car dealership. Now, Kim Adams was actually an American woman. And this is super important because at this point, the British police contact the FBI across the pond to get in contact with the parents. The FBI are talking to the parents. And guess what? Her dad was a lottery winner. So ooh. You can imagine Robert Freeguard's there like, I hit the money. And what they ended up saying was that Robert Freeguard would call up and say, look, I'm actually in the MI5 and I want to take your daughter, Kim Adams, under my wing and I'm going to take her, and no joke, says, to spy school. Oh. And guess what they have to do in spy school?
It's like Spy Kids. Great movie.
Literally. So Kim Adams is now in spy school.
Very jealous, by the way.
Spy school isn't free, Chip. You've got to pay money to take the exams to join MI5. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, well, according to Robert...
Might be able to get a little grant or something, though.
Yeah, well, maybe a grant off the dad for the money. He tells the parents, your daughter, unfortunately, has failed two of the exams.
Oh, that's not good.
There's a third and final exam that we need to pay for, but we're going to need some money to pay for it, right?
I wonder how they grade it, like, yeah, not sneaky enough.
Yeah, I would love to know what this exam looked like, to be honest, Robert. I am very interested. And he told him that this third exam would cost him £22,000. Now, the FBI, they were obviously tapped into these phone calls and they were like, right, this is our time to get him. We have to see the money being transacted to just solidify the fact that this is a scam artist. Mm-hmm. So they came up with a plan to hand over £10,000 of the 22,000 needed to take this third exam. So the plan was that the mum of Kim Adams was gonna fly to Heathrow with a duffel bag filled with cash. They were gonna land in Heathrow. Rob was gonna be there to meet him. So she lands, walks out. Rob's not there. She's looking around, she's getting a bit nervous. Rob appears. He's there, he's at the airport, this is good. Obviously there's loads of undercover police everywhere. The mum's there walking around with a duffel bag, sees Rob. Rob's there like, right, okay, we're gonna head up to the car park. Kim's waiting in the car up there. So the mum quickly says, oh, I just need to go to the toilet really quick, goes to the toilet, on the blower to the police. He's just said that Kim's in the car park, get everybody ready at the car park type of thing. Waddles out, ding, 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 ding. They're walking to the car park, and as they enter them, you see Kim sitting in the thing. Obviously, the mum's so excited to see her daughter again, and bang, the police were waiting there, jumps him. Robert Freeguard, oh, you are under arrest. Got him. Yes, Chip.
On the ground.
Uh-huh. Kind of.
Hands behind the head.
And that's from Chip's previous work.
That was an accurate representation of the scene. I don't often do that, but
yeah,
special. It's a special case today.
And it gets peak because at this point, when they arrest him, they find some keys to a hotel out in the Alps, documents on there to someone named Ronnie, okay? And they realize, oh my God.
Not Ronnie Pickard.
Now, they went to go check out this hotel that was away out in the Alps, and they found loads of documents. They found credit cards, female passports, driver's license, all this stuff. This guy had been finessing.
Yeah, life of a scam artist.
They contacted this Ronnie with the phone number on him. After she reluctantly comes in to talk about it, she'd said that she'd lost over £20,000 over the space of 3 years to Robert Freeguard, right? And that one day, he just completely disappeared, right? Now, later on, after he's disappeared, he calls Ronnie up and says, look, I've got someone that I need you to live with this person, essentially. I need this person to come and live with you. They need a place to stay. Yep. Would that be okay? And now this woman, so she says, yes, that's fine. And she was then working as a cleaner for her.
Yep.
So in this house. And at this point they go, wow, what's the name of the cleaner? And she said her name was Carrie.
Okay.
Heard that name, we don't know that name so far, but she did say that she avoids pictures at all costs and that Ronnie only managed to get one photo of this cleaner, Carrie, that now lives with her, right? And they looked at her and they went, That looks so much like Sarah Smith.
The first victim we spoke about.
The one that's been missing.
The bucket list group.
Sarah
from the bucket list group.
Exactly, right?
Wow.
And at this point, the police say, right, we've got to head to this house right now. So they all head down to this house and they're knocking on it, knocking on it. Now she's obviously being trained. Yo, if people are knocking on the door looking for you, get out, run away. Anyways, they bombard. She eventually opens the door and she's there. The police sort of explain to her really briefly. They take her into custody, explain the entire situation, right? And the first thing she does after this was contact her parents, and that is the first time she saw her family in years.
Damn.
Right? We are talking absolutely ages, right? So finally, Sarah has been sort of freed from Robert Freegard, funny enough, right? He had so many victims. This was just one story, right? Mm-hmm. Also, in the bucket list group, there was a name, a girl named Maria, Sarah Smith's friend.
Yep.
Okay. And she actually said that Maria came out and said, I was actually with Robert Freegard, as in a relationship with him, for 9 years. Had two children with Rob.
Damn.
Right? And he was actually just very violent towards her. Not only that, we got some good news. September 6th, 2005 rolls around, and Robert was sentenced to life imprisonment. Fantastic. Wait, don't hold the applause.
I wasn't clapping, but...
It was... hold the applause, Chip.
Okay.
Because guess what? Robert actually appeals his conviction. He said, look, I never physically held these women captive.
He's an MI5 agent. You can't lock him up.
Chip, I hate to break it to you. I don't think he was an MI5 agent.
Well, there's nothing in there that says he's not.
Look, he claimed that they were never kidnapped. They were free to go when they pleased. But the whole point was that they were actually psychologically imprisoned.
He convinced them, you know, he tricked them into believing it themselves.
Yes.
That was part of his plan.
And because of that, and because they didn't because he didn't physically, like, hold them against their will,
he wasn't holding
them
captive. Exactly. Yeah, they weren't actually locked up.
Unfortunately, the appeal went through and he was found not guilty on that offense, which meant that he was then released in May 2009,
damn,
which is heartbreaking, right? Here's an even sad part is, we've heard some nice things at the beginning there about some of the victims that have now managed to realize that unfortunately Sandra is still with Robert Freegard, right? And Sandra was supposed to inherit a £300,000 house, and you know her two kids, they were fighting as hard as they could to make sure Sandra didn't get that £300,000 house, because they know that if Sandra gets it, bloody Rob's gonna rob it and take it from him.
Yeah.
And he's now inherited a £300,000. So they did everything they could. They took it to court, all of this. And the saddest part was, because of the pandemic, they thought they'd at least get to see their mother, whoever they hadn't seen in like 7 years, right? But because it was the pandemic, they only saw her over Zoom.
Oh.
Right? So they didn't even get to see that. And then not only that, but she took them to court. So she took her own kids to court over this £300,000 house. I can only imagine Robert probably had quite a big say in that.
Yeah, and right? The court proceedings were all over Zoom.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Over this £300,000 house. And then unfortunately, the whole time, Jake and the kid, they felt like the judge was siding with them. But ultimately, the judge turned around and said, unfortunately, we're giving the house to Sandra, AKA Rob. So there we have it, guys. Look, the good news is Sarah Smith is happily married now. Look, John, the guy that sort of found out first in his mind, he was there like, hold on, what am I doing being imprisoned on my own farm here? He actually went to teach English abroad and to perform as a lead singer in a band. Good on you, John.
Respect.
Sophie and Jake, the two children, are still waiting for their mum, which is really sad. They feel like, is their mum ever going to come back and be the person they was?
And what's Rob doing then?
He's still living with Sandra. He's still finessing. He's running like a breeding program, a dog program. Look, it's a bit weird. It's a bit complicated. Anyways, that is one of the craziest stories I think we've done on the Fellas Mysteries. Tell them what to do, Chip.
Yeah, what do you think? Was this guy a bigger swindler than the Tinder swindler? Or has the Tinder swindler still got his crown? Let us know in the comments.
Because this was mad.
Anyway, guys, we'll be back next Monday. So make sure you subscribe and follow on Spotify. Turn them notifications on and we'll see you at 6 p.m. Monday, sharp.
You love to see it.
Airplane mode, brother. What if it buzzes? These fucking slackers. Yeah.
Right, let's do this.
I'll let him know. That's the higher ups. Say, get off your phone.
Yes,
yeah, it's the 80s. Yeah. We're not even meant to have them yet.
Right, yeah, of course.
Yeah.